Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette. I am an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com, and as usual, sitting across from me, I have senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm more than meets the eye.
Okay.
So, Chris and I, just moments ago, were sitting here in front of the microphones talking about Internet Relay Chat. So that podcast may or may not have published by the time you hear this. But during that, we said, you know, we should really talk about another really important part of the Internet that predates the World Wide Web. But it's still around, and it's still playing a role. It's maybe not nearly as big a role as it used to, but something that that we felt needs to be addressed in an episode. Do you want to tell them what it is?
Yes. Oh, now?
Yeah.
Usenet. Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the things that we mentioned in the other podcast, and several of the podcasts we've had in the past, is that not all the traffic on the Internet goes from place to place using the same method.
Right.
You have email, you have the web, you have file transfer protocol. But in the case of Usenet, it has its own protocol to deliver news files, or at least that's what it was used for initially.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's funny because the terms that were used to kind of define what Usenet was early on stuck around, even when you might argue that it's more like a message board, like an old, if you go to a website that has a message board, a lot of the message board stuff that you'll see on there kind of owes a lot to the early Usenet days. And, it relies on a Unix to Unix copy protocol. That was the original protocol for Usenet. So UUCP is what we abbreviate that as, or acronymize. I'm acronymonious.
but that actually changed.
Yes, it did. Yeah, because I mean, if it had just stayed Unix to Unix, then that would have really limited the usefulness of Usenet. It would have been useless net.
Well, not entirely.
Relatively useless net.
Well, and you can actually use the web for a lot of this now. So I mean, you can there are some uses of Usenet that you really don't even need a specific client, although you can still get them. But a later protocol that they developed to provide Usenet services is NNTP, or Network News Transfer Protocol.
Right, right.
And that that became the way of delivering messages for Usenet groups. Now, these are, in a way, it's kind of hard to describe a Usenet group to someone who's never seen one. But if you think about maybe a discussion board on one of your favorite websites,
right?
It's sort of like that. There is a board where there is a topic. Say, you know, fans of Beverly Hills 90210, for example, and people can post messages pro or con. There, just about anything for which there is a fan on one of these Usenet groups, you will find people who are trolling there, posting how much they cannot stand whatever it is that other people are a fan of.
Right, and that this other thing that is probably not related to the first thing at all is obviously better.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know, so, for example, I might jump into the Star Trek fan discussion and talk about how Star Wars is so much better than Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not even be that I believe that. It's just that I decided I wanted to stir up some trouble. So, yeah, actually, Usenet, that's, we can get into how much Usenet has contributed to the culture of the Internet. Trolls are one of the things that first started really popping up right around the days of Usenet. Let's kind of go back a bit. Let's talk about the development of Usenet.
Okay, so I'm assuming you're getting ready to mention Tom Truscott and Jim Ellis, unless
who?
I do it first.
Oh, yes, those guys. So they kind of came up with this idea. This was these were two graduate students with Duke University at the time, and the time mm-hmm. being 1979.
Wow.
And they were thinking that they needed to update an older model of accessing information through the computer system. That would be the old BBS model, or bulletin board system.
Yeah.
Now, bulletin board systems, I actually used these when I was a kid. I mean, mm-hmm. I would log into them. But a bulletin board system is much more limited than Usenet. Bulletin
yes.
board system is you would I remember dialing into them. You would use your modem to dial in a specific phone number. You would log into the bulletin board system, which is hosted on a remote computer. And there you could interact with other users by posting to a discussion board. You could play games. You could transfer files. You could upload stuff or download stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things that you can do on the web now. But it was very limited in that it was only stuff that was on that one computer. It's not like you had access to everything on every bulletin board system. So
right.
every bulletin board system had its own culture, its own selection of files, its own message boards. Also, it had a very limited number of people that could be logged in at one time. Normally, it had like a series of lines open, like phone lines open, that could be occupied before it reached capacity. And if you called when it was at capacity, you couldn't get in. You'd have to wait. And which seems weird now. Just imagine if you were to open up your web browser and you were told, sorry, the internet is full. You're going to have to wait until some people log off before you can access it. But it wasn't like a network, really. It was you were all using one computer as almost like a node, right?
Yes.
And you had it was acting as a server. Your computer was acting as a client, but there was no network. It was just client server. That's it.
Like a hub and spoke.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the host computer is right there at the very center, and then you and all the other computers are on the edge connecting in.
So you would post messages to the hub, and then other people could read them and reply to them, but all the information was there at that one central location.
Exactly.
Right.
And if that one central location went down, then everything was gone.
Yep.
Until it came back up again. Usenet is different. Usenet is more of a network system.
Mm-hmm.
And so Truscott and Ellis had come up with this idea of creating a system that would exist across multiple servers. It would all be based on the same protocol. And you would build essentially a message board, a news group, where you could post articles about whatever subjects you wanted and have discussions about those subjects. And servers would contact one another and compare essentially their message boards.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that one server was missing, the other server would send to it so it could update its own database and vice versa. So that no matter what happened to any one single server machine, you would still be able to access that information because it would exist somewhere on the network, assuming that they had synchronized somewhat recently.
Right.
So, it also meant that you didn't have all these isolated conversations going on across multiple bulletin board systems. That's what was happening before. Like, you might have a very strong fan community in Los Angeles for Star Trek. Well, let's just stick with Star Trek. And then you have another really strong fan community in, say, in New York City, also about Star Trek. But they wouldn't necessarily be logging into the same bulletin board system, especially if they were using dial-up modems, because they don't want to pay long distance to have to connect to it.
Right.
So their conversations would all be regional. Usenet allowed a global conversation to occur because you're no longer worrying about logging into one specific local computer.
Right.
So it was a revolutionary idea. We take it for granted now because the World Wide Web has been around for a couple of decades. But at the time, it was there was this idea of, hey, we've already got the lines here connecting all these computers, and we've got the protocols that support this kind of data transfer, the whole TCP/IP protocols. Mm-hmm. Let's build something on top of this infrastructure that allows us to share information. So it's the same sort of idea that eventually became the World Wide Web.
Right.
But in a totally different implementation.
Okay, then. So there are literally tens of thousands of Usenet news groups
Yes.
available. And they're still, you know, this, it's still in pretty wide use. You know, the, recently I've my most recent exploits on Usenet, I've found several communities that are basically just spam magnets. But there are still quite a few that are very, very popular. And Usenet actually has a hierarchy to it.
Yeah, that hierarchy wasn't always part of Usenet's history, in fact. The
No.
problem was that as more and more information was being added to Usenet, it became difficult to navigate through all of it to see the stuff that's relevant to your own interests. Mm-hmm. And so they needed to come up with a scheme that would allow people to post relevant things in discussions and make it easier to find what you're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't become an exercise in frustration. Part of that fell to a group of people that became known as the Backbone Cabal. That's really what they were known
as. That's very sneaky sounding.
And they, yeah. Well, and some people argued that it was sneaky and that the choices they made were not representative of the community as a whole. Something that we see like in the background of wikis all the time now.
Yeah.
Same sort of problems happen with wikis. Whenever you have a big, wide open community, then any one group making decisions is going to upset someone in that community because it doesn't represent them, right?
Right.
So the cabal decided, all right, well, we need to try and start to organize this in a more efficient way. And that leads up to, in 1987, an event called the Great Renaming.
Gasp.
Yeah, so in the Great Renaming, that was when things had come to a head on Usenet. It was getting far too chaotic, and they needed to find a way of creating a hierarchy that made sense. And that's when they started making the what was initially called the Big Seven.
Yes.
It was the Big Seven hierarchical groups. So you had things like comp, C-O-M-P, for any sort of computer discussion, comp, dot, and then you could put something behind the dot to specify. So you could do like comp.hardware. And mm-hmm. then if you wanted to get more specific, you could do comp.hardware.monitor. So mm-hmm. you would be able to, you know, break these down into subcategories so that people could have very specific conversations and not have to worry about, you know, cluttering up one comp thing with every single computer topic known to man.
Right.
And there were other categories as well. There was, you know, SCI for science. There was originally there was talk, which mm-hmm. was supposed to be kind of a catch-all category, but it was also monitored.
Mm-hmm.
This did not sit well with some users because it meant that you couldn't have true free communication, free speech, because someone somewhere was monitoring what was going on and could accept or deny any particular topic.
Mm-hmm.
which then led to what has become probably the most famous or perhaps infamous hierarchy in Usenet.
Alt,
which was not part of the cabal. In fact, that was a big selling point for the whole alt thing. That's what made it so popular so quickly.
It's kind of anything and everything, really.
Yeah.
Anything goes.
Alt dot whatever. It's Brian Reed is the guy who kind of spearheaded that project to create it. And he was one of the people who objected to this idea of the cabal-backed hierarchies, saying that, you know, if we do this, it limits us too much. We need it to be more open than that. Mm-hmm. And this was a place where frank discussions could be held on any topic.
Yeah.
And like Reed's point was that he wanted to open up a topic under REC, R-E-C, which is for recreation. Dot drugs. He wanted to create a topic for that to have discussion about drugs, mm-hmm, and drug use, and was denied. He was not allowed to create a talk.drugs group either. So he decided to create this alt hierarchy. So you know, just circumventing the whole system and creating a new division that has nothing to do with the big seven.
Mm-hmm.
And it took off. In fact, it took off,
yes,
so much that it is the largest of the categories, which is kind of ironic because alt, of course, stands for alternative.
Right.
But now everything else is the alternative because it's the main thing. Kind of like alternative music was in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s.
Exactly, exactly.
Alternative music was the only thing out there. There was no alternative.
Stupid, yeah, and
alternative music. Grungy.
And that's the thing is, if you...
Flannel-wearing, dirty, hippie-type Seattle and the thing. Go ahead.
Are you done?
I was a punk rocker.
You and Sheena. Anyway, so... I totally lost my train of thought.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. You can't just say, you know what, I want to start a discussion topic about my band and just go start a group. Not instantaneously. You can put it up for a suggestion. And you know, once people have had a chance to look at it and say, oh, well, you know, I think that would be okay, or I don't think that would be okay, you know, it can become a group. It's not like starting an internet relay chat channel where you go, you know what, I want to talk about this right now and just go start a channel. You have to actually have it approved by the powers that be, which really are kind of decentralized anyway. It's kind of weird, frankly.
I think the comparison to wikis is fairly apt.
Yeah.
Because wikis are often maintained by a community of users, and they often resist any attempts at any single user trying to dictate policy.
Yeah.
We saw that not that long ago, actually, with Wikipedia, where the co-founder, Jimmy Wales, went to try and delete material from the Wikimedia Commons collection, mm-hmm, in hoping to head off any problems with sponsors for Wikimedia. And as a result, because of because he didn't go through the proper procedures and he bypassed the whole community aspect, there was a big kerfuffle over at Wikipedia.
Kerfuffle.
Yeah. And same sort of thing happened on Usenet all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It still does probably in some of these news groups.
Yeah, it's not like it's not really a democracy. And the people in charge aren't really completely in charge. It's a little chaotic.
It's a little Wild West out there.
But you know, I think the people who are really getting the yay or nay votes are the people who have been established and really entrenched in Usenet.
Sure. Well, we mentioned earlier that trolls were one of the they kind of emerged from Usenet.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most common trollish tactics on Usenet was to log into any particular discussion forum and then start talking about something that was completely off topic.
Right.
And you're doing it on purpose. You're doing it specifically to upset people. Or you would log into a discussion group about a particular topic and then start asking inane questions.
Mm-hmm.
Or start asking legitimate questions and then slowly have them morph into more and more inane questions just to see how far you could push people, how long you could get people to respond to you before they caught on to that it was all a joke.
Right.
And trolls, really, the whole purpose was just to, in most cases anyway, the purpose was just for their own amusement, to try mm-hmm. and wind people up, see how upset they could get them, or just see if they could play a joke. Not all of them were malicious. Some of them were really just pranks. You know, they're more mischievous than malicious. Mm-hmm. And then there were others where you would get people who were fans of one particular discussion group, and they would get real rivalries with other discussion groups and would actually go in and spam. That's another thing that came out of Usenet, spam. Yeah. The earliest instances and naming of spam came from that. And people just coming in and posting ridiculous stuff. Because that's another, you know, if you post enough to Usenet, you start to scroll content off of Usenet.
Yes.
Because it only had a limited amount of space to store data. And if you went in and posted enough stuff, you could push data off of Usenet, and then people wouldn't be able to access it anymore.
Yes.
And since people were using Usenet to do things like not just have conversations, but to host files, where you could, you know, especially things like material that's under copyright, there's tons of piracy that you can find on Usenet of various kinds of materials.
Yeah, that was one of the things that that struck me as odd, because I used most of my Usenet use was way back in the early to mid 90s. Mm-hmm. And then a few years ago, I heard people starting to talk about Usenet. Actually, one of my favorite software shareware developers came out with a brand new Usenet client, and I was thinking, really? People are still using that? And then I realized the correlation between that and my internet service provider putting a cap on the amount of data that you could receive over Usenet. Because I was thinking, since when did Usenet traffic become so, you know, such an issue? And then I learned about the binaries groups.
Right.
Because you can break down a file into multiple pieces.
Right.
And spread it out over multiple messages. And the messages are threaded, I neglected to mention earlier, because that's how you sort of follow the topic, is that they're responding to posts and you can thread them together and see, you know, where the conversation has gone.
Right.
We can also do that with binary files. And that's how, you know, rather than using something such as BitTorrent, for example, people were sharing cracked files or binaries of other media.
Yeah.
That, you know, so people were going on Usenet. And I think it sort of escaped attention simply because Usenet was old in terms of the internet.
Yeah, you could find stuff like
concerns.
Software, oh, images, yeah. Music, that kind of thing.
Provided, of course, your ISP isn't blocking those groups, which it doesn't necessarily. Your ISP doesn't have to carry access to Usenet. They could block it, and if they are blocking access to those groups, you may not see them. So
yeah,
don't write in and go, my ISP doesn't have those. Well, maybe your ISP is blocking them.
Yeah, there are ISPs that would just put anything that falls under alt binary.
Yeah.
As a, you know, they block it automatically.
Yes.
Which, you know, that can be frustrating, because their Usenet was a way of being able to share legitimate open source software. So it wasn't just stuff that was pirated or, you know, that was being illegally shared. There were legitimate uses to log into alt binaries
mm-hmm.
that had nothing to do with piracy,
no.
or stealing intellectual property.
Mm-mm.
But, you know, it gets really, really hard to separate all of that out. And so most companies, most ISPs, if they're going to block it, would just rather paint with a broad brush than to try and have to determine, okay, well, is this group all right? And is this group not all right? And why? And that's just one part. I mean, the piracy was one part. Pornography is another big, big thing on Usenet.
Yes, it is.
Or at least it used to be. So you know, there are some ISPs that would just block all the groups that had anything to do with pornographic content.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I in the 90s, when I would log into Usenet and look at the different groups, I was kind of shocked at how many were dedicated to that in various forms, especially when you're like, you know, obviously, my education doesn't extend as far as these people, because I would have sworn that three of these groups are saying the same thing. But they're all arguing that it's something unique, and I'm scared to see what they mean.
You know, it reminds me of a song.
Yeah.
So well,
maybe we should just drop that part of the subject.
So earlier I mentioned
yes.
That in general you would want to get a Usenet reader, a client, software
yes,
client,
yes.
to do this. And that's generally the way you're going to go to get more recent postings. But there was a website that used to archive postings from Usenet. And as you were mentioning earlier, Jonathan, also, usually the server will basically slough off the old messages as the newer ones come in to yeah. save space. They only save up to a certain point. Well, as people were archiving them, there was a website called Deja News that was keeping track of all this. And if you were looking for something in particular, and it was, from 5 years ago or something like this, and you saw this posting in this news group and you didn't save a copy, you might go to Deja News to do this. Well, they were acquired by a larger company, which you may have heard of.
Is it Yahoo?
No.
Is it Apple?
No.
Is it Facebook?
No.
Twitter?
Uh-uh.
That's got to be Google.
Yes. Yes, it became Google Groups. And Google has managed to keep Deja News archives up and running under the Google Groups banner. And there is quite a lot of internet history chronicled in the pages of Google Groups.
Yeah, they've got a really, really fun little timeline, too.
Yeah.
Where they can tell you little things like... like in August 1981 on Usenet, there's the first documented review of the IBM PC.
Yes, and they have the...
in 1982, first mention of MTV.
Yeah, June 1982, actually, it's right after that, the first mention of Star Wars Episode 6.
Yeah, that would be Return of the Jedi. Actually, if it's the first mention, I bet then they called it Revenge of the Jedi.
They might indeed have.
And so, there are a lot of really cool little firsts in here, like the February 1983, first Me Too post, which would become a bane
yes.
in people's existences, Me Toos.
Oh, Me Too.
Because it doesn't add anything of benefit to the discussion. It's just you wanting to, hey, I've been quiet for a while and I need to talk now. Me too.
And then the most important post in August 1984, the first mention of the Commodore Amiga.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. How? Also, July 1984, first mention of Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
That was well before he would become... never mind. I'm not going to go there.
No, but there's tons and tons of information in there. You could basically track... you can even track the first .com internet company back to when Brad Templeton mentioned Clarinet.
Yep. You got the first mention of AOL, the first mention of The Simpsons. I mean, it's kind of neat. Now, granted, this is just a list that Google's compiled. It's not like it's comprehensive, but it's just kind of a fun little thing of seeing how, the development of various technologies, cultural icons, that kind of thing.
I remember Torvalds introduces Linux.
Yeah.
Tim Berners-Lee introduces the World Wide Web.
Which that was,
whatever happened to
that? Yeah, it's still around. As it turns out, the World Wide Web would take a big chunk out of Usenet traffic, because a lot of the stuff eventually moved over to the web, where you'd be able to find the same kind of discussion groups or not usually in the same sort of format of Usenet. I mean, Usenet was a catch-all, right?
Yeah,
like it was an enormous place to have discussions where you could discuss practically anything. You could probably find a topic for whatever it was you wanted to discuss somewhere on Usenet.
And you still probably can.
Right.
You might have to do a little picking and choosing on the different groups.
And
but
it may
it's
not be
hard.
That there are that many people discussing it these days. And on the World Wide Web now, of course, you'll find niche websites that might cover a small sliver of what you might see on Usenet. There's still some of that hanging around the web.
It actually kind of, in a way, reminds me of what an RSS aggregator does. Because rather than going to a niche website to have a discussion with people about different topics, all kinds of different topics that you were interested in, you'd have to go individually to those websites. You could, if people were still using it like they used to, go to Usenet, check your reader, and see the 10 groups that you're really passionate about in one place, and then go through the messages for each one, make replies and things like that.
Yeah, it's
comments.
Kind of a predecessor to RSS readers.
Yeah, I mean, it just struck me how similar those were when you mentioned the niche websites, but mm-hmm. it does have that advantage, and it does have a sort of a community feel to it, where didn't used to. Why are you have a strange look on your
face? I just saw another thing on the date list that made me smile.
Oh, okay. What's that?
July 1992. Terry Pratchett's first post on alt.fan.pratchett.
Ah, yes.
So we were talking about that on the IRC podcast, if you know, if you want to go back and listen to that or wait until it publishes, whichever, we don't know.
That's funny. We referred in each of these to the other one, so one of them is going to have an Easter egg in
it. It's kind of recursive.
Yeah. Anyhow.
You'll get caught in a vicious cycle.
But it's really formative in the way that it sort of transitioned people from bulletin boards to the internet culture.
Yeah, creating the whole platform for a global conversation about various topics, which, you know, the web has kind of taken that torch and has ran with it. But,
yeah.
It's you know, Usenet is where you see the seeds of that.
Mm, so seeds.
Yeah, definitely an important part of the development of the internet and internet culture. Mm-hmm. You know, like we were saying before with the whole trolls and the spam. I mean, other things really got started on Usenet that have become very popular online. Things like emoticons.
Oh yes.
Not necessarily started on Usenet, but they became popular there. And mm-hmm. and some of the various acronyms like BRB for Be Right Back and AFK for Away From Keyboard. You would even, you know, occasionally people would get into discussions where it was happening about as close to real time as you could manage on Usenet. I mean, it's not like it was instantaneous. It wasn't like a chat program. But people would still do that where they would post a message and be like, you know what, I'm going to check back in half an hour and see if Bob has responded to this because he was just on and I've just responded to his message.
Right.
So, neat stuff.
Indeed.
We'll have to talk about some other really important various protocols, programs, things like that, that have been part of internet history that we maybe don't think about that often, but are still, you know, instrumental in where we are now.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, because that's kind of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys have anything you would like us to talk about specifically, you can email us. Our address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And until then, Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.